Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the By The Men MFC podcast. Tonight your two regulars, Jay and Busta, are joined by our good friend Des P. How's things, Des?
Yeah, they're good, thanks. I'm enjoying this lovely festive period.
good on you. Well, the Embaraclough era has begun with now back-to-back wins. Fantastic. A hard-fought 1-0 victory over Partick Thistle on Saturday. Jay, very much a game of two halves in the sense, very competitive, attacking first half, coupled with a battle in the second half, which we managed to hold out again for the second week running and claimed a massive 3 points.
Yeah, that's it. I think you can see the effect that Baraclough's had already. It kind of obviously remains to be seen just how good a tactician he maybe is or how good he is in the transfer market, but Keith Lasley spoke about the idea that he was trying to drum in belief into the players, and obviously you can tell from any time you hear him speak that he's a positive guy, and I think you could see that on the park on Saturday. First half attacking, I think we could have been 3-0 up, 2-0 up at least at half time. Ainsworth had a chance to square it back to Sutton, then obviously Lee Irwin could have scored on the counter on the second half, so we could be sitting here talking about a 3-0 victory, but that may be a wee bit greedy. But yeah, I think the positivity was there, the enthusiasm was there, and you're right, first half was attacking, attractive football, and show that grit and determination that we've been lacking for most of the season, then we did it well and managed to hold out.
Busta, that's an interesting one that Jay raised, talk about drumming confidence into the players. Lionel Ainsworth, for me, one of the players that certainly seems to have benefited from the new manager. Man of the match on Saturday, the papers ringing his praises too. It's good to see that a few players that we were perhaps putting down a few weeks ago seem to have a new lease of life under the new manager.
It certainly is. I didn't make it on Saturday because of other commitments, we've been Christmas and stuff, but from what I've seen on the highlights, from what I was reading, as you say, the first half appeared to be all about us really, up until 10 minutes maybe before, but it seemed very reminiscent of a few games last year where we were scoring a couple of goals and then trying to hang on for the rest of the game. I don't think we were deliberately doing that either on Saturday or last year, but it worked for us last year at times, so as I say, let's see if Baraclough can maybe drum into them that that's not the way he wants to play, because he was pretty critical in the second half when I watched his interview after the game.
Holmesy, it's going to be the new chant, 1-0 to the Motherwell, but I suppose early doors with the new gaffer and given a league position when he arrived at the club, we've just got to be happy that he's taken 6 from his first 2 games.
100%, yeah. I think the one thing that stood to me is the fact we've had 2 clean sheets as well. Over the last sort of few months, under Stuart McCall, we've given away so many ridiculous goals. We're just such poor defending. It's good to see that Baraclough's come in straight away, and obviously he's looked at that area and somewhere we need to improve in, and we've come in and we've got 2 clean sheets. As you say, if you don't concede any goals, you're not going to lose any games, so it's definitely a base to work from going forward. I'd happily take 1-0 wins over the next few weeks. 3 points is the main thing.
Well, the games are going to come thick and fast over the first week of January, starting New Year's Day against Hamilton Accies. I'll start with you again, Holmesy. Just given that we've been turned over in the league so convincingly on our home turf, lost out in a scrappy game in the League Cup, this is one where we need to get back the bragging rights, because Accies have really enjoyed some good times over us so far this season.
Yeah, it's definitely a step up compared to the last 2 games. Hamilton have had a superb start to the season. I don't think anyone would have predicted how well they've done. I think they're sitting New Year's Day and they're going to be 6 points off top of the league. So it's an incredible start to the season. I think it is a step up, but I think it's a game with no reason to fear. I think we've got players that can hurt any team in the league. We talked about Ainsworth earlier. It's good to see him getting back into some kind of form that he had last season. Last season he was double figures in goals and assists. So he's a massive player if you can keep him fit and get him playing for 90 minutes. But certainly a game, I think I'm going to go on Thursday and I'm feeling fairly confident that we can pick up 3 points. Certainly nothing to fear.
Jay, potential that Aki's might be hurting a bit after losing that late goal to Eremenko at Kilmarnock on Saturday?
Yeah, hopefully. But again, these things can always go one or two ways. They can either still be hurting or it can get a bit of reaction and they could take it out on us. But I think they're spot on there. I think, you know, earlier in the season we've not had the best times against Aki's, but then on the flip side, earlier in the season we didn't have the best times against anybody, and we've shown in the last few weeks that we're getting that positivity back. We're certainly not a bad footballing side. I think if you actually compare the two teams, I think, you know, we've got players that can hurt them. So if we go with the same attitude and the same positivity, which I'm sure we will with Barraclough in charge, then yeah, I don't see any reason why we can't get something out of the game.
Bastard, I think even for a Muddle podcast, we can't dismiss how good Aki's have been this season. Very much were my tip for relegation. And kind of shows you how much I know, I suppose, given that they are a prominent part of the top six. They look like they've even got the possibility to challenge for Europe. Yet, that being said, we've got to go there with the confidence brought by winning the last two games.
Again, I can't really say anything other than what's been said already. They've been brilliant this year. Totally unexpected, I think. I don't even think, you know, they would have expected that, to be fair. But, you know, as Des says as well, I go there, you know, expecting a win, to be honest with you. I don't even know where that's coming from. You know, maybe as you were saying, you know, the two wins are, you know, making us a bit overconfident. Because when you look at the sort of the performances, I don't think they were too great. Again, I can't comment on Saturday about the actual performance after what I've seen in the highlights, but the stats and the figures don't look too clever. But I don't know, for some reason I'm pretty confident that we'll go there and win.
Just one other factor to consider on Thursday is the artificial surface, something that quite a few Premiership managers have been critical of in recent weeks. Even Kilmarnock manager Alan Johnson, who, despite his team playing in this artificial surface, is kind of criticised it a wee bit. Given the winter conditions, we might need to be a wee bit cautious over the fitness of some players.
I agree. I don't really fancy these plastic parks either, to be fair. You know, they might be, you know, they're 4Gs and things like that or whatever they are, but football should be played in grass, I think. You know, it's muck, grass, things like that. I'm not a fan of these things, and I don't know if it's ever been proven, but they seem to be a bit more harmful to the players as well.
I just think when grass is solid, frozen solid, it'll definitely be cancelled, whereas this will be able to recover a wee bit better, but it's still going to be absolutely solid underfoot, which I think really is a prospect of a real danger for certain players, especially ones that are prone to niggly injuries as well.
Again, definitely, you know, the all-weather part of it is the purpose of it, and it's, you know, one of the advantage probably. But as you says, it's the sort of the injuries, the running on it, you know, that a lot of players complain of having knee problems and things like that, knee twinges, and, you know, if you've got bad knees, it sort of wears at them, you know, so I'm not a fan of them, to be honest with you.
I've got to say, I don't know. I mean, I'd be interested to see, you know, if there is any scientific evidence either way, because as much as we do hear it, I think I remember it might have been at Dunfermline at East End Park a few seasons ago. There was a bit of an issue with theirs, but I'm pretty sure when you actually went to the game, it was in tiles. So there was, like, problems with, you know, sort of the edges and things like that. I think a 3G park, I don't see. I mean, I'm obviously not an expert in that field, but I sometimes think that it can be quite over-exaggerated. I think there could be a bit of dramatics employed there. You know, managers are always looking for excuses, either before or after matches. I think if you're a professional football player, then, you know, you'd like to think that if you have an niggling knee injury, then that's probably going to niggle you, you know, in your career, wherever you play, whether it's through a challenge, whether it's, you know, not landing properly after a header, etc. I think quite a lot of emphasis is placed in these artificial surfaces that really doesn't need to be. Yes, they might be slightly more, they might cause a little more wear and tear on the joints, but I think at times it can be completely blown out of proportion.
Fair to say, though, that quite a bit of that's psychological as well. I noticed even one of our players in Stephen McManus, early doors, he had talked about how he didn't fancy the artificial surface at Accies, and then performed very much like a man that almost felt like he couldn't perform on it. And then the other thing I noticed about the Accies game in the Cup was how unpredictable the ball was. The bounce is very extreme at times, and I think you know from our seven-a-sides desk that can be one of the hardest things to judge.
I think I'm kind of with Jay on this one. I think these things are going to be the future. And I think that sometimes it does come across as a bit of an excuse to get in early doors. Maybe on the Friday before the game, that some of the managers or some of the players will come out and say, you're not too fat, not too big a fan of these surfaces. And then after a 2-0 defeat, well, they come back and say, yeah, well, it was the pitch. Football's football, pretty much anywhere you want to play it. These players will have grown up training on this kind of type of surfaces. There shouldn't really be any excuses for poor performances. I think we'll beat them on the pitch before. I think we need to go and do it again.
I think that, again, without actually getting to the physical injuries and things like that as well, it's obviously an advantage for Hamilton as well. They'll be used to things like ball bouncing and, you know, how fast it rolls in the park, how to play the passes. It's all right saying you're a professional football player, you should be picking it up, you should be learning, you know. But if you're playing on it, training on it at day in, day out, you're going to be a bit more used to it than ourselves, so it's obviously an advantage anyway as well.
The only issue I have with that, though, is the fact that somewhere in deepest, darkest Hamilton, there could be some Accies fans huddled around their mobile phones on Skype discussing how our slope at Firth Park gives them an advantage when they come to visit us. I mean, you know, we always heard the slope. I mean, maybe died a death recently, but I remember going on the likes of High and Bovril and things like that, and the slope was getting constantly slated. You know, how the Motherwell players must be able to, you know, deal with it better because they play on it every week. You know, these things happen. Pitches are different sizes. Some pitches are narrow, some are wide. You know, that's just how it works. You know, that's home advantage for them.
But I still think, though, given that the majority of football is played in grass, surely, and given the proximity between Motherwell and Hamilton, would it not be fair that Motherwell got to train on the pitch at New Douglas Park tomorrow and then, or maybe for a few hours today as well? It's open to the public. I don't know if we could maybe have someone go undercover and book a training session for the team, but
the only issue with that then is then you need to work out what the problem with it is. If the problem is with, you know, the possibility it may cause physical injuries, then no, you can't, because you don't want your players to be on it any more than they have to be. If the problem is because it might give them an unfair advantage, then yes, there may be, you know, an argument for that. But this is where I think that it gets blown out of proportion. You know, nobody really seems to know what the actual problems are with it. Is it that it gives an unfair advantage? Is it the injuries? You know, with one of those arguments, then yes, you would go and train on it, and the other argument, you wouldn't.
Yeah, I think my point is maybe rendered invalid there, given that I think it's an advantage, and I do think that if people looked into it, that certain players aren't comfortable in playing, so it's double an advantage. And maybe sometimes these injuries are a wee bit psychological as well. You maybe feel something a wee bit more playing on an unfamiliar surface. So anyway, we'll move on to something that we were talking about prior to coming on, and we're slightly divided in opinion on whether we should or shouldn't discuss it. But prior to the game on Saturday, a minute's applause to mark the 7th anniversary of Phil O'Donnell's passing. Jay, I'm going to start with you, mate, if that's all right. Is it maybe time to show his family a little bit more respect and let them grieve rather than being reminded of what was obviously such a horrible day on a yearly basis?
Yeah, I mean, firstly, I wasn't sure whether it was a minute's applause or a minute's silence because we didn't make it in time. My issue sort of with it comes, it's a tricky thing to discuss because obviously we're talking about a tragic event that I believe all four of us were at the game, so we witnessed it, we know what happened. It wasn't, you know, it was a horrible, horrible moment. We've all, I presume, you know, paid our respects in certain ways. I went up to Firth Park a few nights afterwards, laid down atop, I stood outside the
the church or the chapel in Hamilton at the funeral when they broadcast it over speakers to outside. And I can understand, you know, maybe the year after or 2 years after. But for me, it becomes more of a sort of a winter tradition rather than a commemoration, rather than, you know, the whole point about mourning is that you mourn the loss of someone and then you move on. And I understand that, you know, it isn't about mourning, it's about commemorating a player. But for me, it just kind of becomes, you know, so repetitive that it kind of becomes devalued. It becomes, you know, just something that people do before games. I think that we're going to end up, if we do it an 8th year and a 9th year and a 10th year, you know, where does it end? Do you end up with young football fans who, when they hear the name Phil O'Donnell, just associate it with a minute silence every year and don't associate it with a Motherwell legend? For me, it is getting to the point now where it's just been overdone for me. I think, I mean, obviously the conversation about minute silences and minutes applause is a separate one as well. I wouldn't have them at football matches at all. But I just think that it gets a bit, it dilutes it for me. It just becomes, you know, a repetitive motion. It's all right, it's that time of year again, so we're doing that again. And it kind of seems to get more devalued as years go by.
Any other guys get more of an opinion in this one, or shall we move on?
I think there's nothing really I could add to it that Jay hadn't already came across. I think, you know, it came with Saturday, it's the 7th year, and it wasn't even the anniversary day itself. I think maybe if you come across a year where it is the day itself, then you could do a small thing either before the game or maybe something the fans could do during the game. I think it's fair enough, but I think to have it every single year, again, Jay said it kind of devalues the whole thing. We have got the Phil O'Donnell stand. It's there every week. We see the picture of him on the stand every week. Everyone who was at the game, every Motherwell fan will remember it. We'll have our own thoughts and we'll do our own thing every single year. I don't think it has to be a public thing every single season, every single game around that time.
Yeah, if I just to pick up on that, I think if it was, you know, if you're playing a match on an anniversary day, then I can understand that. But, you know, just that time of year, I mean, for me, it was sort of highlighted by the fact that, you know, there were minute silences all over Scotland at the football. And, you know, for me, it kind of devalues both. You know, I know it doesn't need to. You know, you turn up, you pay your respects, you stand in silence. But the idea that everywhere across Scotland, you know, there was this sort of mass outpouring of grief for the tragedy in George Square, and we are, you know, sort of, I saw it sort of build on the Motherwell Facebook as though, you know, it was a minute silence for Phil O'Donnell and the victims of George Square. That, to me, just sort of dilutes it a little bit. It kind of, you know, it just becomes routine. And that's not what this should be about. We should be remembering a great footballer who, you know, died in tragic circumstances, has been rightly honoured at the club in a few different ways. And now it is just this routine. And obviously, I'm perfectly aware that this is the kind of opinion that is probably not going to be you know, supported or popular amongst the Motherwell support. But I do feel that, you know, it is getting on a little bit. And I wasn't in time. I understand I don't need to be in time. I've got no problem whatsoever with anybody engaging in it or taking part in a minute's silence. But for me, you know, with every passing year, it goes from a great Motherwell legend who died on the park to, you know, just what we do around that time of year.
I think we have to point out, just as you touched upon there, though, that the club have marked Phil's memory fantastically well, and I think especially in the aftermath of his death, they handled mass media attention worldwide and came out of it looking as if they had put up a fantastic show of respect, which the man completely deserved. But I think now, as time has moved on, we've got the display in the side of the stand as well. Had a grand unveiling. There's been nights at the Civic. There's been tributes paid at end of season dinners and so on and so forth. And it does, you're right, it becomes slightly as if it's a wee bit overpowering and a wee bit too much at times. Whereas I'm perfectly aware that many will disagree, and that's part and parcel of doing the podcast, I suppose.
I'm a bit on both sides here, you know. Phil O'Donnell was my hero when I was 7 years old. when he came back, he was never the same player, obviously, but again, he had become my favourite player again. So, you know, I don't mind the honouring of him and, you know, the pause and that. But as he says, 7 years every year, it's a bit wearing. My opinions of minute silences and things like that at the football matches are, or even minutes of pauses as well, at football matches, you know, they shouldn't be involved. I can understand, obviously, if, you know, something like Phil's case happens, you know, player dies well at the club and things like that, fair dues. But I just don't think these things fit into the football. Football's, you know, what if there was someone at the football on Saturday who was, you know, taking time out to get away from a sad situation, or a friend or a family member or somebody who did get hurt or died in that incident, you know, and then they're having to go and sit and that be brought up in their face, no matter what ground you were at. I think what Motherwell should really do is officially retire the number 10 jersey. I know that no one really wears it. The last person to wear it was his nephew, obviously. But I think it'd be a final sort of thing to do. Maybe officially retire the number 10 jersey. Maybe even on, you know, the 10th anniversary or something.
Yeah, I think possibly now it's getting to the stage that it's going to need to be done on the 10th anniversary. Listen, we've got plenty to talk about elsewhere. Let's move this on quite quickly, and we'll move on to, given that tomorrow is Hogmanay, we've had a whole year, many highs and lows as Motherwell supporters, I would say, Desp. And what, given you're the guest, first and foremost, your highlight?
I think it'll probably be one I'll share with the other guys on the panel here. It'll be obviously Craig Reid scoring on the last minute up at Pittodrie. I think, obviously, through that game, we were kind of under the cosh. We didn't really look at scoring. I remember going to the 90th minute and hearing it was only 1 minute added on time, thinking, well, the chance is pretty much gone now. But then to turn that around and effectively the last kick of the game, secure second spot was certainly a highlight. Obviously, for Motherwell to do that in back-to-back seasons is a fantastic achievement. So that would probably go down as the greatest moment of 2014 for me.
Basta, anyone stand out for you? I know that was always going to be the favourite, but there has been, particularly the back end of last season, there was plenty of good times there.
Yeah, you know, I was going to say that would probably be mine as well. The drive up and down to Aberdeen, the drive down was phenomenal, to be fair, but I think, as you say, the whole sort of the last tail end of the season there, when you look at, for example, the team at that point, how they were playing and the results, at least compared to, you know, August and onwards, you know, John Sutton, I was going to say looks like a different player, but that's a lie. He was at least scoring goals.
He scored two in his last two.
No, don't get me wrong, I know I'm a big John Sutton fan, but I think if you're not putting the ball in front of him, he's not going to score the goals. And you know, the last part of the last season, basically, it was great, and as you say, to finish best of the rest again, I don't think we'll see that again, to be honest with you, for a while.
Jay, anything that we've missed there, can you be the voice of doom and give us a low point?
In terms of highlights, I stupidly was doing the West Highland Wave when Craig Reid scored his winner. So my experience was slightly different. I just got a notification on my phone when I was sitting having a pint and they drove her in and went absolutely tonto. For me, my other highlight, I'm pretty sure it was in 2014. You know how these away days kind of all mix into each other. But a Tuesday night, away day up in Inverness with Ian Vigers scoring a winner. Just, you know, a tiny, tiny Motherwell support. And it was just absolutely fantastic. So that was actually my highlight for 2014.
I believe it was 66 away fans that night, Jay.
Yep, that was well, it would be about that, but it was I enjoyed that. I obviously enjoyed that more than sitting in a pub doing the West Island Wave while Craig Reid scored.
Can I just say as well, in regards to my personal highlight, it wasn't actually on the field. It was again relating to the Aberdeen game. It was how quickly the stands emptied at the end. That was utterly phenomenal. I've never seen a place empty as quick as that in my entire life. That was my highlight of the season last year.
I think one that kind of stands out for me as well, Celtic looking like they were going to pinch a 3-2 at Fir Park towards the end of last season. and the supporters all doing the huddle as we went up the park and scored to make it 3-3. That was rather sweet as well. Yeah. That was round about the time. I'm just actually looking at last season's results. We lost to Kilmarnock, won it up at Inverness on the Tuesday, lost to St Mirren the following Saturday, so we were looking like we were going to throw it away. And saying that, the week after we lost 5-1 to Dundee United, but we'll not talk about that one. But in the end, it all worked out. Again, desperate hopes for 2015. I suppose Barraclough now has to get a bit of stability and just pushes towards safety. He seems to already be doing that. Any expectations or hopes beyond that?
Obviously, your first protocol, obviously, at this stage of the season, we're sitting third bottom. You've just got to keep yourself 10th or above. I've still got an outside chance at the top six. I think it's going to be tough, but I think we're 12 points behind. I think it's now 15, 16 games to go before the split. It's certainly not impossible. But I think, you know, we've got a favourable run over the next couple of fixtures. If he can pick up maximum points over the next two or three games, go on a four or five game winning run. If you look at St Johnstone, they've done that recently, and they've just sort of made themselves at home in the top six. I think if we do that ourselves, gives ourselves half a chance. But first and foremost, stay in the league. But, you know, always got to look up the way.
Jay, I've just realised that we're going to have to talk about the Aberdeen game as well, because we won't be recording the podcast till after that. It's another toughie, and given Aberdeen's forum, they'll bring a huge support. Despite the fact it's on television, I think they'll bring a huge support. They really seem to believe they can win the league. It would be nice to put them in their place again.
Well, yeah, I mean, again, a lot of what our sort of opinions on Sunday will be dependent on what happens on Thursday. But, you know, it's a home fixture, and yeah, it's going to be a really difficult game. You know, hopefully Barraclough has done his research. I know he's sort of said that he's been immersing himself in Scottish football, so hopefully he's not, you know, getting a little carried away with such a good start, because that will be a phenomenally difficult game. You know, not only are Aberdeen a good side, but as you said, you know, they've got the bit between their teeth. There's genuine talk in the media about a title challenge, so that'll be a really, really difficult game. But, you know, if we get a good result on Thursday and we're good into that game, you know, with either, you know, undefeated in, what, four games or something like that, then, you know, who knows, we might be able to, you know, show up a performance, maybe get in, show that grit and determination that we've started to show, and maybe get a little bit of luck and maybe get a point out of it. But, you know, I wouldn't be going into it too confident, because that will be a really difficult game.
No let-up in the fixture list, Buster. Seven games in January. God knows why we played the Scottish Cup at the end of November, given that the next round isn't played to the 7th of February, but it'll be a demanding schedule. Away games at Dundee, away games at Celtic, Dundee United, then home games against Aberdeen, Kelly and St Johnstone, obviously starting the month away to Accies. So plenty of chance to pick up points. We could be recording a podcast at the end of January with a whole different outlook.
To sort of tie it into your question regarding, you know, your hopes and things for 2015 as well, you know, I think, to be honest with you, our home games are the ones we have to look at winning. If we pick up anything on the road, fair enough. I think, given our start to the season, if we finish third bottom, people will accept that and hope that we can then pick up for there. But again, a bit like Desp, I'm quietly hoping that we can sneak into the top six as well. There's a bit of a gap developing between St Johnstone and Kilmarnock, but you know, I'm hoping that we can maybe at least get up and run about there at least.
Guys, I think that's all we've got time for this episode. Apologies for the delay in recording this week. We'll be back on Monday for a recap of both the Accies and Aberdeen games. Until then, thanks and have a very nice new year.